Welcome to the post-election edition of It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Hilby.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Ken, what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, about 40 minutes. I want to talk about, was this a very close election or was this a landslide?
It was both, wasn't it?
It
was both.
It was like a floor wax and a dessert topping.
Exactly. Yeah. Cut it out, you two. Listen, I really do think this was an extraordinarily different election from any of the ones I've covered or you've covered. Many of those were the same elections. And it's just a rich area for research and discussion. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
Well, you know something? I mean, I was thinking about this. I was watching one state after another, one battleground state after another, fall in Obama's lap, and which was remarkable because this was supposed to be too close to call, very, very tight race. It could have gone either way.
And it did go that way in the popular vote.
It did, 50% to 48%, which is considerably less than what Obama got 4 years ago in his 53.
Down about 3 or 4 points.
Yeah, exactly. Which is also unusual for an incumbent president getting reelected, because if you think of Eisenhower and Nixon and Reagan and Clinton and
even
Bush,
W got a better vote in his reelection.
In his reelection, whereas Obama did not. And yet, doesn't it remind you, Ron, of the Kennedy-Nixon in 1960? Kennedy only won by 100,000 votes, yet he got over 300 electoral votes.
Very similar dynamic, although it also reminds me of the 1916 Woodrow Wilson re-election, Charles Evans Hughes almost beat him, and Wilson had a smaller vote than he got in 1912, at least in terms of the electoral
college. You were inconsolable that night.
Yes, I was. Yeah. Well, I was a huge Charles Evans Hughes guy. In 1912, though, Woodrow Wilson won because it was a three-way split. In 1916, he had to do it on his own, and he barely managed to do it.
So should we talk about 1920 with Warren Harding, 1924 with Calvin Coolidge?
Actually, no, because those were not parallel elections. Oh. What we have here is an election that, in some respects, is like 1916. We had an incumbent running again who was not that popular, but had just enough of an issue, had just enough of an advantage, and a targeted strategy around the country with certain groups in certain states that he was able to hang on and do okay in the electoral
college. You don't even have to go back to 1916. Go back to 2004 when you had a not very popular president who did have an issue, national security, and you had once again a challenger from Massachusetts who didn't do as well as one thought. Although going into that election also, President Bush, of course, famously said, "I have this political capital. I intend to use it." One, what is President Obama's political capital? And two, what is the message out of this election?
There is very little message out of this election, except a defensive one, I would say. Here we have wound up after $6 billion and more than a million television and radio ads. And I'm not making this up. This is not an exaggeration. It sounds like one. $6 billion, a million TV and radio ads. We have wound up with the same president, the same party in control of the Senate with more seats, and the same party in control of the House with virtually the same number of seats and the same leaders. What have we accomplished?
Well, what we have accomplished is that in five of the last six presidential races, the Republican Party has failed to get a majority of the vote.
But that doesn't change the situation in Washington right now.
Oh, right. Oh, no, absolutely.
In the long run, when we're talking about the arc of history, yes, you have the point.
You gather two of each animal.
That's right.
Right.
And if it's the Republican arc, they're both white animals. But we do know this, that... What do we know, Ken?
I don't know what we know because there seemed to be a lesson coming out of 2008 in that the Republican Party was looking backwards, the Democratic Party was looking forward, and the Democratic Party had these new demographic pickups. Women, Hispanics, of course, African Americans, young voters. Republicans were relying on the old Republican coalition. So the lessons that we thought the Republicans learned after 2008 and the lessons the Democrats...
Well, they unlearned those lessons.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Because I had a big sea shift in 2010.
Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that before 2010 came 2009. And in that year, Barack Obama actually took over as president. He tried to move on a number of fronts: health care, re-regulating Wall Street.
60 votes in the Senate.
Stimulus package in the Senate. And
auto bailouts.
All of these things were controversial, and they stirred up a tremendous reaction on the right. We learned the phrase Tea Party. It was loosely applied to a very complicated and varied group of people who were sort of in the Republican universe, conservative universe, but were basically opposed to Washington doing all these things under President Obama for whatever reasons. And they became more and more powerful, politically speaking, and they carried the day in the 2010 elections.
And starting in 2009, sweeping New Jersey, sweeping Virginia, then January 2010, sweeping Scott Brown into the Senate seat, Ted Kennedy's Senate seat in Massachusetts.
That's right. Just, you know, sweeping up all over the place. So that looked like the new energy, and in 2010, of course, that continued. But in 2012, both parties made a bet. The Democrats said, we think we can bring out the electorate of 2008 again, and we think it will be substantially in favor of Barack Obama again, maybe not to 100%, but close enough to get him reelected. And the Republicans said, no, that 2008 electorate is not coming back. 2010 is still the dominant mood of the country, and the electorate will be smaller, and the electorate will be more white, and the electorate would be more male, like it was in 2010. And they thought that electorate would prefer Mitt Romney. They were right, but in a sense, both parties were right, because the Democrats could bring back the 2008 coalition. The numbers are pretty close, and they brought back the young people and got not all of their votes again, but most of them. They brought back the African-American vote, got almost all of their votes, not quite as many as 2008.
Latinos were the big story, I think.
And Latinos, even more populous and even more in favor of Barack Obama. And that was critical in a number of these states. And the Asian population, still the smallest by far, but 75% for Obama. Big shock to the Republicans there.
Yeah, let's stick with the Latinos for a second, because in states of Nevada, we kind of thought that was a Democratic-leaning state, and we've seen that before. But we thought certainly Colorado, Florida, we thought those could be Romney states because of the old Republican coalition, and yet...
One week ago, you and I said Florida and Colorado for Romney.
We did. And now we're predicting that Obama wins it.
I prefer to place my bets after the votes are in.
Right. I mean, a lot of it is attributable, and fairly attributable, to Latino strength. The Puerto Rican vote in the I-4 corridor in central Florida, the Tampa, Orlando, Daytona Beach corridor. We have Colorado Latino, big Latino turnout. And we can't forget the gender gap. We've been talking gender gap for decades now. We started with Ronald Reagan talking about gender gap. But it's especially true when you have a Todd Akin, when you have a Richard Murdoch, when you have those kind of statements about pregnancy and rape and somehow God's involvement in all this. You send a signal out there that you basically jeopardize the kind of suburban female coalition that you'd love to assemble, and I don't know where the Republican Party goes from here.
Okay, just to put some numbers to that, the male portion of the electorate, again, in 2012, was less than the female component, so it was 47% men, 53% women. The men voted for Mitt Romney, 52-45. That was 4 points worse for Obama than he did among men in 2008. But he survived that because he still got 55% of the female vote.
Which is a larger proportion,
and, you know,
right?
55% of the larger portion, right, is going to be pretty good. Right. And only lost 1 percentage point from his performance among women in 2008. That's why he survived in the popular vote.
Well, then if he did better among women, he still was only 50-48%. So somehow I'm looking at the headlines, I'm looking at the Twitter feeds, I'm looking at everything on the web and all that stuff, and everybody seems to be saying huge, huge Obama victory. And Andy Coard on NPR this week talked about what an awful campaign Mitt Romney ran, how, you know, he was so far to the right, then he moved to the left. He wasn't seen as empathetic towards many of the voting groups in this country, and yet it was a 50-48 election.
Okay, but the background to that, of course, is that from very early on in his presidency, we have been above 8%, and just in the last 2 months have we fallen just a hair below, I think it's 7.9,
right,
it was as we speak. That is historically a complete killer,
right,
for an incumbent president. So on the basis of that number alone, and on the basis of a lot of other economic numbers, such as the slow rate of growth in recovery from the recession, this would be an election where the president of the United States had no chance of being reelected. So the stunning thing here is not the margin, but rather the composition, I would say, of the winning coalition for the president, the composition of the vote for the challenger, and ultimately the lost opportunity for Republicans to get back into power at a crucial moment when there would be Supreme Court justices to be appointed, perhaps two in the next 4 years, conceivably more than two in the next 4 years, and when there are enormous decisions, enormous fiscal policy decisions facing the country.
The question I have then is, would a better candidate than Mitt Romney would have won it? Certainly the opportunities were there, the economic numbers were there for the defeat of President Obama? Was it a flawed or a dangerous Republican nomination process when you have to run way to the right to get the nomination and then somehow adjust to the center to win in November? So the question is, would a better candidate have beaten him, or is there a more fundamental problem for the Republican Party?
I think there can be truth in several of those explanations, and they're not mutually exclusive. Mitt Romney may have been the best candidate that that particular Republican primary process could have produced. None of the other candidates that he was running against, to my mind, would have beaten Barack Obama. Obviously, that would be disputed by many of those people. You're going to have your Rick Santorums and whomever saying they could have beaten Barack Obama. But I'm not so sure that the person that the Republicans wanted was not Mitt Romney. He did a great job in that first debate, and it was almost enough to turn the election. Some people are going to argue that had he not had some of the other, you know, missteps, the 47% remarks, and if he had not had Hurricane Sandy clobber him in the last week and knock him off the front pages, Mitt Romney still could have brought this off. I'm not so sure. I would guess that there was a larger decision being made here by a larger electorate, and that ultimately, while the candidates always matter and the campaigns always matter, there was some truth in what the president said in his acceptance speech on Tuesday night.
As it has for more than two centuries, progress will come in fits and starts. It's not always a straight line. It's not always a smooth path. By itself, the recognition that we have common hopes and dreams won't end all the gridlock or solve all our problems or substitute for the painstaking work of building consensus and making the difficult compromises needed to move this country forward. But that common bond is where we must begin. Our economy is recovering. A decade of war is ending. A long campaign is now over. And whether I earned your vote or not, I have listened to you. I have learned from you. And you've made me a better president.
As we look at these returns for a second term, and as we listen to the president's words, I still have this unanswerable question about Hurricane Sandy, that it seemed like if Mitt Romney did indeed have some kind of sense of momentum, which may have come out of the first debate, October 3rd in Denver, was it halted in his tracks when President Obama became not the campaigner-in-chief, he was the commander-in-chief, and there was something, first of all, one, it forced Mitt Romney off the front pages. There was nothing he could do, and this was like 3 or 4 days within a week to go before
critical
the election.
Days.
I don't know anybody whose mind was changed, but I'm just wondering, if I just looked at the newspapers, it just seemed like Obama just became truly the president of the United States at that moment.
I think he sealed the deal in the last week, and he sealed the deal largely because of Hurricane Sandy, because of those wonderful you-can't-pay-for-this pictures of him, the president, with Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, the man who delivered the keynote address at the Republican convention. One of the most effective arguments Romney had in the closing game was, I'm a more bipartisan kind of guy than Barack Obama. I could go talk to a split Congress. I could deal with Democrats better than Barack Obama can deal with Republicans. And he was making some headway with that argument. Suddenly, he's crushed under these visuals of Barack Obama being the president, being above partisanship, and making all of this nice with Chris Christie. That really made a difference. But is Hurricane Sandy really what decided this election? I don't think so.
No, I'm just wondering if it's, as you said, sealed the deal.
Yeah, I think it's more like there were three turning points. You had the conventions, and that took a dead even race off into Obama's direction for a period of time, for reasons we've talked a lot about all fall. Then after September ended, we went into that first debate. Obama seemed to be on cruise control. Romney was on fire. He came in, did a great job. Suddenly people said, hey, I could see this guy being president. And, you know, the guy who's been in there hasn't been that great. And for 2 or 3 weeks, Romney's coming up, getting ahead.
Benghazi didn't help either.
No, and Benghazi was another element, although I think that probably meant more to a fairly small community of journalists than it meant to the average voter. But it raised real questions about the Obama administration. And he was ahead. I don't think there was any question, but there was a point in October when Romney would have won this election. But that was fading before Hurricane Sandy. Most of the polls had returned to where they had been before.
And taking that one step further, even as Romney narrowed the gap in the national polls, still in the battleground states, which we've been talking about for, you know, ad nauseum for all these months, Romney never moved ahead in those states. As close as Ohio, Colorado, New Hampshire, Virginia, Florida, Iowa, Wisconsin were, Romney never opened up a lead. He was getting closer, but the president always kept it, and that's what put him over the top.
That brings us back to the question of, could a more charismatic, connecting, really exciting kind of emotional candidate have seized that moment where Romney would come in to tie or come close to tying in these key states and pushed ahead and gotten control of the election the way Ronald Reagan did in 1980, a comparison that's often been made. If another candidate could have done that, was there some idealized candidate out there who could have still taken this away from Barack Obama? I would say, listen to the concession speech and ask yourself, was Mitt Romney the guy to take it away?
This election is over, but our principles endure. I believe that the principles upon which this nation was founded are the only sure guide to a resurgent economy and to renewed greatness. Like so many of you, Paul and I have left everything on the field. We have given our all to this campaign. I so wish that I had been able to fulfill your hopes to lead the country in a different direction, but the nation chose another leader, and so Ann and I join with you to earnestly pray for him and for this great nation.
The reference, obviously, Mitt Romney's reference to Paul was Paul Ryan, his running mate. For all the big to-do we made of Paul Ryan and how that may affect the vote about seniors, about conservatives, getting out the vote among conservatives, what effect at all did Paul Ryan make?
Not a lot of evidence on this point. I think he probably did not help much in Florida, although the senior vote in Florida did go against Barack Obama, and perhaps Paul Ryan didn't do that much damage in that group. He did not get you the state of Wisconsin. In fact, he doesn't really seem to have made much of a difference one way or another in the state of Wisconsin, and had a little trouble holding on to his own House seat there in the first district. I think in the end, vice presidents rarely do, and the contrast between Paul Ryan, who did not take over in any sense the media campaign, and Sarah Palin, who 4 years ago totally took over the media campaign for at least a month or two, is pretty striking. We've talked a lot about the presidential race. It's, of course, enormously compelling. But the second most surprising thing we witnessed on Tuesday was the failure of the Republican Party to gain any seats in the Senate whatsoever. In fact, they lost two.
Yeah, I mean, the losses were not surprising. I mean, Scott Brown was the underdog against Elizabeth Warren. We knew that Olympia Snowe's seat in Maine would go to Angus King, the independent, which is essentially a defeat for the Republicans. And Richard Murdoch was in big, big trouble in Indiana, given his controversial comments. But at the same time, we thought the Republicans would do better. We thought that how do you not win North Dakota?
How do you not win Montana?
That would be a beaut. But I mean, given the fact that John Tester was, you know, running basically against the Romney tied the way that Scott Brown ran against the Obama tied Massachusetts.
A lot of ticket splitting on the Great Plains. In fact,
the only pickup was Deb Fischer beating Bob Kerry in Nebraska.
And even there, not by that terribly much. I was surprised, I must say, and I think this goes back to some of our predictions, that Tammy Baldwin managed to pull it out against Tommy Thompson in Wisconsin. I spent many years in Wisconsin in the 70s and 80s, and Tommy Thompson in that era was rising to his time of four consecutive gubernatorial wins, and certainly one of the most popular governors they've ever had.
Right.
And for him to come back out of retirement to run again for office and to be defeated by a woman who was, by some measures, among the very most liberal members of the House, by a state that has been voting kind of conservative of late, was a shocker.
Well, and not only that, I mean, you take the culture conservatism of Wisconsin, and here you have an openly gay member of Congress.
The first one
becoming
in the Senate.
Now becoming the first openly gay or lesbian member of the Senate. And again, this is not something you expect out of Wisconsin. But again, maybe the thing about Wisconsin and other states is it's a look forward. It's not a look into the past. And the reason I say that is because Tommy Thompson did represent, as you say, the 70s and 80s and the 90s, but certainly a past that may be no longer in Wisconsin. Look at Arizona. When Jeff Flake beat Richard Carmona, that was very, very close.
Amazingly close.
In Nevada, when Dean Heller beat Shelley Berkeley, that was very, very close. So even the states that we thought the Republicans would win, in states like Arizona and Nevada, both Republican retentions, still were much, much closer than anybody expected.
On the other hand, and before you get too carried away of thinking of this as a big Democratic blowout election, you have the House of Representatives, where the Republicans were defending 63 seats that they had taken over just 2 years ago. And usually when you have a huge tide election like that, there's a pretty good ebb tide 2 years later.
Right, a correction.
We've seen this again and again and again and again in both party directions. Not so much this time. They didn't have that much trouble holding on not only to their majority, but pretty much to the full margin of their majority.
Especially the freshman who won in 2010. Part of it may be redistricting. We do know that the Democrats did very well in Illinois because they ran the show, they drew the lines, and they defeated four Republican incumbents in Illinois. But in other states, such as North Carolina, the Republicans drew the lines and did very well. Thank you very much.
So the party results do seem to be rather split, and in the House, the Republicans have a lot to brag about. But in terms of the long, again, arc of history we were talking about earlier, there does seem to have been a great deal of encouragement in this election for progressive causes and for social progressive causes. And I'm thinking here about the growth in the number of women, particularly Democratic women, in the Senate, where we have now reached 20 women in the Senate. We had more women running for the Senate this year than ever before.
18, right.
And we now have 20 women in the Senate, which is easily more than we've ever had before. Most of them are Democratic. The two women who left the Senate were both Republicans. How is that going to change that institution? No, take your time and think about it.
I will say that I expect to see some big things coming from Elizabeth Warren. First of all, not only to mention that Massachusetts, for the first time, has elected a woman governor and senator. That's never happened before, Elizabeth Warren. Progressives have always said about Elizabeth Warren that she's the kind of liberal that they wish Obama was. And the fact that she doesn't hold back, she believes in her causes, and she fights for her causes. And they're already talking about Elizabeth Warren in 2016. We haven't even mentioned 2016 yet, which is pretty remarkable. But anyway, and it's very possible that in the new Senate, which has an expanded Democratic majority, folks like Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin could have bigger leadership roles.
A new generation of leadership. And in a number of issue elections around the country.
Could I just mention one thing about women? I mean, we're not the first ones to mention this, but we did talk about it in the podcast. New Hampshire becomes the first state in history to have an entirely female congressional delegation. They have, of course, two female senators, Jean Shaheen and Kelly Ayotte, and both Democratic women ousted Republican incumbents in the congressional seats in New Hampshire. First state in history to not only have all members of its congressional delegation women, but also they elected a female governor as well.
And speaking of some of the social issues that I was mentioning a moment ago, several states approved gay marriage. No state had ever approved gay marriage by ballot measure.
Right, the six states that have it now, all because of judicial fiat or legislature, right.
But in Maine and Maryland and possibly in Washington, although we're still counting ballots in Washington state, that initiative was approved for gay marriage in those states. And also two states approved initiatives that legalized the use of marijuana. I understand some of the young people call it pot.
Yes, and one of those states, Colorado, I understand there's been a huge run on Fig Newtons.
Yes, yeah. And the other state was Washington State. The answer is Washington State. The other state. All right, there is so much more to talk about. We've just had one of the most historic elections in our lifetime, if not in the entire lifetime of the United States. And we're going to be talking about, all the people that we haven't had a chance to talk about in this podcast.
We are ending this podcast not knowing so many things. There's still the fate of many members of Congress, like Alan West in Florida. We still don't know, as of this podcast, lots to talk about next week.
Yeah, Mary Bono Mack, which a lot of people to talk about.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll be back on this subject again next week, but by the force of time, that's it for this week's political podcast.
And you can follow NPR's continuing political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Thanks for being with us for this historic election all through this historic cycle. And join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
One talk over the line, sweet Jesus. Sitting downtown.